You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM.
CJLO News. This is Ahmed Mujtahid. As students begin their new school year, Montreal's French school board struggles to fill vacant teaching positions. The Commission scolaire de Montréal says it needs around 1,500 teachers over the next 5 years to meet the needs of the rising student numbers. The president of the French school board told CTV News that the board is working with local universities to ensure more teachers graduate. She also added that Bill 21 and its ban on religious symbols has not caused any candidates to be refused work. The board recently changed its stance on Quebec secularism law. Originally, the school board said it would fight Bill 21, but it recently published hiring notices saying employees will be subject to Quebec secularism laws. The Vancouver Rape Relief and Women's Shelter, an organization that provides shelter and services for rape victims and women fleeing domestic violence, has become the target of violent graffiti. Threatening messages such as Kill TERFs, an acronym referring to trans-exclusionary radical feminism, were written across the windows of the organization's Kingsway Education Center. The organization was deemed discriminatory by the Vancouver community for its policy of denying services to transgender women. The center says that this policy is necessary to protect women who have experienced male violence and may not be comfortable around transgender women.
The climate and ecological crisis is a global crisis and the biggest crisis humanity has ever faced. And if we don't manage to work together, to cooperate and to work together despite our differences, then we will fail. So we need to stand together and support each other and to take action, because otherwise it might be too late.
This was part of Greta Thunberg's speech upon her arrival in New York after a 15-day trip across the Atlantic. The 16-year-old Swedish environmental activist has traveled to the city to attend a UN summit on zero emissions after refusing to fly because of the carbon emissions caused by planes. The teenager has made headlines for her school strikes, which have inspired a worldwide climate change protest movement. Her first strike for climate took place outside the Swedish parliament in August last year.
CJLO is a college community radio station broadcasting out of the Loyola campus of Concordia University in Montreal, Quebec. We broadcast at 1690 kHz on the AM dial and have a transmitter with 1000 watts of power. The views expressed on air do not reflect CJLO. Any views expressed during a show are those of the DJ and not of the station as a whole or its management. If you would like to find out more, please visit our website at cjlo.com. Thanks for your support and keep listening to CJLO 1690 AM, Montreal's underground radio.
Talento, fortuna, esperienza. Impegno, costanza, coerenza. Tra genio e follia c'è poca differenza. Hanno lo stesso punto di partenza.
And now the break is on. And the substitute, Danilo, right at the heart of it. They've got plenty forward. Ronaldo's up as well. Danilo! How about that for an introduction?
Visto dagli occhi degli altri, perché quando non sei tu che piangi, gli occhi sono meno rossi e meno grandi. Se vinci ti vogliono bene, ti fanno la ola, ti cantano un coro. La vittoria è una cosa di squadra, ma se perdi, perdi da solo. Per ogni ballerina che ha male i piedi e si medica, per ogni calciatore che risparmia per le scarpe nuove, ogni studente che non mangia si dimentica, o musicista che anche da stanco va in sala prove, per ogni
Santander, out wide, Orsolini, who's inside.
Wonderful ball played in! And the header from Soriano breaks the deadlock! the dying moment.
Fai la butti.
Nulla è impossibile se credi in quello che fai.
Se credi in quello che fai.
Chi ci crede è, chi è che ha fede è, e chi riesce a vincere anche senza te. Nulla è impossibile se credi in quello che fai.
Se credi in quello che fai.
Chi ci crede è, chi è che ha fede è, e chi riesce a vincere anche senza te.
Immobile. Can he equalise here on the turn? Pulls it back! In! Luis Alberto! And finally, they make one of those chances count. It just seemed to be a matter of time. On terms in the derby.
Se sei te che ci metti la faccia, chi dice che non ce la fai lo fa perché lui non ce l'ha fatta. Vorrebbero che pure te facessi come ho fatto loro, ma se non lavori al tuo sogno non sarà mai il tuo lavoro. Per quella ballerina che adesso balla in teatro, il calciatore che ora gioca nella sua squadra del cuore. Per ogni studente che ancora non ha mollato e trova la forza nelle parole di quella canzone.
And they find an equalizer here. Oh, they can! Just incredible! Di Lorenzo takes the congratulations on this epic comeback.
Che fai la butti.
Nulla è impossibile se credi quello che fai.
Se credi in quello che fai.
As I said last week on the Calcio Guys on CGO 6090, nothing is impossible in the Serie A, just like our title song here, Nulla è Impossibile from Nero Argento. As we saw the comeback from Napoli against Juve. This week we have Adriano Donardo, Gianni Del Colli, actually in studio with us. His car, well, it's in the shop with the other Gianni. It didn't break down. But then we have a special guest all the way from Washington, D.C., Richard Carmen from Serie A Sit Down. Richard, how's it going?
Hey, it's going really well. How you doing?
Not too bad. So you're in Montreal?
I am.
Visiting the city, I hope?
Absolutely. Only 2 days in, so, but other than that, it's going to be fun.
And so what we like to do on this show, we're not your traditional Serie A podcast where we won't hide our biases. You know, we know that Adriano is the Milan fan, Jenny's the Roma Napoli fan, I'm the Juventus fan. So tell us a bit how you got into the Serie A, how you got, as we see.
The beautiful Shevchenko jersey that Richard
is rocking today. That's right.
So tell us about your history in, as a fan.
Yeah, well, I probably started in the mid-90s. That's when I started noticing Calcio, especially Milan and Champions League. You know, that Champions League is the only thing really that was showing on TV at the time. And so I saw those red and black colors, fell in love with the team, and I've been following them ever since. And yeah, it's been great now that Serie A has become really big now, especially in the States for us. ESPN's picking it up. Before we had BN Sports and stuff like that. So a lot more viewing of it. So it's growing the sport tremendously.
I wanted to ask you about the Serie A in the States. Obviously in Montreal, we know that there's a large Italian community and there are a lot of Serie A fans, whether it be Milan fans, Napoli fans, Juve fans, whatever. But what's that passion like down in the States?
It's just as big. I mean, because the Italian contingent down there is huge, especially like in New York, Philadelphia, even in the West Coast, some areas. The Italian passion is still strong. All the Italian districts, especially in the bigger cities, they still have passion for the team. They try to stream their games either Rai Italia or whatever. But now that they got ESPN and stuff like that, they can watch the games. At least it's in English, but at least they get to watch the games in good quality as opposed to trying to stream it through Rai and fuzzy views there. So
yeah.
And your podcast, City I Sit Down, tell us how you started that.
Yeah, it started, we're on our fourth season of City I Sit Down. We're part of the World Football Index. Frank Crivello and myself, we started it, and it's been amazing. We started from scratch, really, just two guys trying to do a podcast. Actually, we had two other members. One person was in Peru, and the other person was in Toronto. But now it's just the two of us, and it's been going strong. We had a lot of good guests on, and 4 years going on, it's unbelievable. It's going so fast. So.
Beautiful. No, right. That's great.
Congratulations on the 4 years, honestly. I know it's all good things, but like also to do a podcast like that must have its own set of challenges. What kind of challenges did you face? Not only starting the podcast, but like building up your listening base and building up your popularity of it.
Yeah, so it's hard for us because the four of us in the beginning, we were all in four different locations. I said Toronto, Peru, Milwaukee, and then I'm in Washington, D.C. Wow. Now it's just Frank and I who are in Milwaukee and D.C. And so our main form of communication is online, Skype. And so it's difficult with that. You got to make sure we're in different time zones. The time zones are fairly close, but when we get guests, especially European guests, we typically record at nighttime.
Yeah.
But when we have guests on, we got to adjust to make sure, because if you got a European guest, that's 6 hour time difference. Mm-hmm. We have to go, you know, start at, you know, around this time, 2-3 o'clock, yeah, just to squeeze them on. So it's been difficult, and then also trying to do the editing and all that good stuff. So it's been hard, but it's a process we've learned and become more efficient as the years have gone by.
I can imagine. I mean, after 4 years, and you guys, I've seen your social medias, you know, you guys are doing pretty well for yourselves. You got, I think, over 2,000 on Twitter and, yeah, and counting. So, I mean, honestly, congratulations as well. You know, maybe a biggest moment that you guys had so far in these 4 years, like what stands out so in your mind in these past 4 years?
Yeah, some of the best moments have been like when we do preview pods and end of the season pods. We get like about 4 or 5 guests on at a time. Just,
wow,
a round table just chatting, yeah, about Serie A. We've also had, you know, some nice color commentators like Andreas Cordero, and we had over in Australia, we had a guest. That was fun with timing right there, because Australia's about 12 hours different from,
yeah,
us.
Yeah, they're backwards.
Yeah, Adriana Del Monte. So, yeah, we've had, it's been fun just having the random guests come on, especially the well-known reporters or color commentators, and then having these group discussions for the beginning or the end of the season, and doing our, like, player ratings throughout the season as well. Yeah. Those are really fun times to do, because, like I said, it's always different people who like different teams. Just trying to weigh in and say, well, why do you think this guy belongs to the top 11? Well, he's my favorite team. I don't care. Okay, I got you.
So. Makes sense.
So you have that Shevchenko shirt on.
Yep.
Is he your favorite player past Milan?
I think so. I mean, just slightly ahead of Kaká, I think.
Wow.
Obviously, Paolo Maldini and Baez and all those guys and Nesta, they're great. But Shevchenko, I think, it takes the top for me.
Current favorite player on AC Milan?
That's a tough question. Mate Rebic? No.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know, probably Romagnoli, I guess, right now, because he's been there the longest. Donnarumma has to win my love back. It's getting there, but, you know, after a couple years ago with the whole, yeah, saga with staying or leaving,
yeah,
I got to say Romagnoli at present, and Frank the Tank, Kessie.
I put more of the blame on that on Raiola rather than Donnarumma. I think Donnarumma was just being corrupt.
He's a cancer in
Syria. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
He's got a lot of clients. He's doing really well for himself. So, yeah, hey, you know what? What
am I going to say? The Pogba sale from Juve to Man United got him a villa.
Yeah, there you go.
Wow.
One player, he got him that, so.
I mean, good for him when he's making all that money, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He still dresses like a schlep, but it's okay.
So Milan beat Brescia this weekend. Now we're going to start moving into actual Serie A talk. Milan beat Brescia.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Adriano, finally you're joined by another Milan fan.
It's about time.
You guys had to be happy with the 1-0 win.
I mean, it's positive. I mean, after the start of the season that we had against Udinese, going down 1-0 and losing that game, starting off on the wrong foot, I mean, fans were already panicking. Gianpaolo was like, already, oh, maybe we're going to switch formations, this and that. You know, but we don't have the players for the type of scheme that he wants to run. But I think it's still in due course. I mean, I think things will come. I mean, it was against Brescia. They just came up into Serie A this season. Unfortunately, I mean, it was Hakan Çalhanoğlu who got our first goal of the season. I don't know how it was him, but hey, you know what? He got it passed, and we'll definitely take it. 1-0. You know, it's a decent result, I guess, but I'm still not 100% convinced. There's a lot of work to be done. I think me and Richard were talking before, Rebic coming in, he obviously follows the Bundesliga a bit more with his Schalke podcast as well. I think he was telling me that he's a great player, so I mean, I'm hoping, you know, good things for him, and I hope he can be integrated into the squad, because I think we do need some more goal scorers and maybe some more creativity, and I think he can do that, and maybe hopefully getting Piontek back on course as well. So happy with the win, yes, we'll take the 3 points. Got this little international break coming up, Hellas, and then the derby coming up as well. So, I mean, it's patience, and I think things will come in due course.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And I think what we've seen is progression from the first game to now. After the Udinese game, a lot of, we call them Milan Twitter, where they just jump off the edge and like, the season's done. We're, you know, Gianpaolo's talking about changing formations, this and that. And many of us, and I know you guys here in Montreal, Milan Club Weekly, or Milan Weekly podcast, we're all saying, slow your roll. It's a process. It's going to take time. Give it a chance. And they did look remarkably better, I think, since the first game to now. It's not where they need to be, but it's better. They got a goal. Hakan Çalhanoğlu, like you said, scored the goal with the header, but they're looking better. They didn't look completely inept like they did against Udinese, which is a big change. And having Ante Rebic, I think, is going to do well as a second striker to Piontek, because, frankly, Andre Silva played a similar role to Piontek, and he wasn't doing it when he had a chance. So
absolutely.
You know what? I think every fan base has that crowd where – something bad happens, and it's worst case in scenario. You know, Juve Twitter was in panic mode on Friday when they announced Chiellini's injury. You know, Chiellini was going to be out for the derby. Sarri already had his sickness. You know, Juve Twitter was the most negative I've seen in as long as I've ever been on Twitter.
Since Champions League last year.
Yeah.
Defensive prospect in ages.
Yeah,
playing for you guys.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to continue that City at Match Day 2 chat next on the Calcio Guys here on CGO 1690.
Are you looking to take the next step in your education? Well, learn about undergraduate and postgraduate programs, professional degrees and doctorates, as well as work abroad, language travel, and internships at the Study and Go Abroad Fair on Thursday, October 3rd at the Palais de Congrès de Montréal. Admission is free. For more information, check out our website, www.studyandgoabroad.com.
Art? We can pop it. Indie? We can pop that too. Dream, synth, chamber, pop, pop, pop. Rock? It's already been pop.
The rest of us goes pop. Same awkward host, new concept and time. Tune in Tuesdays at 7 p.m. for the best new music in all pop subgenres. Only on CJLO 1690 AM.
We're gonna have so many feelings.
C'est quoi ces stations CGLO, c'est quoi ça, hein?
Oh, CGLO, station collage, hein?
Collage, hein? C'est quoi ça?
Vous... Concordia!
Université.
Ouais.
Montréal.
Ouais.
Québec. CGLO.
And now the break is on. And the substitute, Danilo, right at the heart of it. They've got plenty forward. Ronaldo's up as well. Danilo! Can they find an equaliser here? Oh, they can! Oh, just incredible! Di Lorenzo takes the congratulations on this epic comeback. Stoppage time in Turin. Oh, Cavani! Oh, a horror show for Napoli right at the death. The most reliable player in their team has just put through his own net.
Juve 3-0, and then 3-3. And then the heartbreak at the end for Napoli fans. But it's safe to say it was one of the crazier Juve-Napoli games in quite a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Probably since the last time Koulibaly scored a winner against Juventus.
Yeah.
But City A fans, if you're a neutral fan, you had to enjoy the spectacle.
Yeah.
You had to enjoy the comeback.
It was a show and a half.
Napoli, yeah. I would have never thought Napoli would be able to come back, just mentally. Because
I was one of the, I myself as a diehard fan, it just in general, when you're down 3-0 in soccer, it's already a mountain to climb. Every goal is a back-breaking goal. And then when you look at Juventus's back line and you're like, crap, not only do we have to, it's already hard enough to get one goal because the first half was abysmal for Napoli. Now you have to get three of them. Yeah. And they have a very quality back line, probably one of the best in Serie A. So you're just standing there like, okay, how the hell are we going to even get one past?
Yeah.
I have to give credit to Ancelotti. He felt like as if the team needed a bit more speed and offense. So I'm not a big fan of Mario Rui, but putting him back on, he added speed to the left side. Lozano, what a debut. Oh my God. Honestly speaking, because prior to this season, one of my coworkers was Mexican, and he was telling me about this guy. Lozano's amazing. He's a young kid, like especially when he was playing in the World Cup. And I'm like, yeah, he's pretty solid. He looks cool. I like him. Then when he announced the signing to Napoli, I'm like, oh, look at that. Your boy's on my team now. He's like, yeah, watch. He's going to do great things. I'm like, let's hope. Great first debut. But honestly speaking, if I'm going to pinpoint the blame of this game to anybody, I would say Napoli should point the fingers to themselves because they put themselves in that 3-0 hole. And themselves had to try to get out of that hole, which they did. I don't know how they did it, but they did. I lost my voice screaming at the TV when they did it. But they put themselves in that position that they had to come back. And it's unfortunate Koulibaly, like as best as he tried, had that mistake that put it in his own net in the top corner. Mario was just stunned. But in the end, they have nobody else to blame but themselves because they led in those first three goals.
Yeah, first 60 minutes were abysmal.
Yeah, terrible.
And Juve dominated. They pretty much dominated the game except for minutes 60 through 80.
Well, because Napoli wasn't actually there. The first 60 minutes,
believe it or not,
wasn't...
Napoli dominated possession-wise.
But they weren't there.
Yeah, in total, Napoli dominated possession-wise, but their heads weren't there. Juve was
first 60 minutes.
Juve was very clinical with their passes. Like, remember I said in the last show, I'm like, even in the previous show, I'm like, Juve is a very sound team offensively. They know how to connect with each other. That's what makes them very dangerous. Whereas you could see a lot of teams are still kind of adjusting to their offensive system. AC Milan, for example, not trying to shut down the team, but I'm saying like they look disorganized up front a bit.
New coach,
so it makes sense. But Juve is one of those teams that they get these like beautiful plays going. So, and they were exposing Napoli's defense. It's two games in a row. Napoli's defense is still very a mess, but Juve exposed it hard.
Okay, so you know what the stats on the game? Shots, total shots, Napoli 15, Juve 12. Shots on target, 7 aside.
Yeah.
56% possession for Napoli, 44% for Juve. They each had 86% passing, but Napoli had 545 passes versus Juve's 432.
Yeah.
So that means Napoli had a lot more misplaced passes just because they had more passes.
Definitely.
In total. 13 fouls each, 3 yellow cards each. Yeah. So it was pretty much even. At the end, I personally think a Juve win was merited because of how they played. Meret kept Napoli in the game, especially in the first half. He had some really good saves. He had one on Kadira, another one on Douglas Costa. Costa, I think, hit the crossbar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The save on Kadira, if that goes in, I don't think Napoli comes back.
That would have been 3-0 in the first half.
Yeah, and they gave Kadira all that space to turn around and shoot.
And it's Kadira. So,
and it's Kadira.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And for the Koulibaly own goal, obviously, I was happy that Juve won. I was happy that they scored a goal, technically, but it couldn't have happened to a better player and a better person. You know, it's like, why couldn't it have happened to Mario Rui?
Yeah. It's like, out of all players to have that unfortunate luck, Koulibaly is not the one who deserves it. And what's stupid, especially with the whole racism issue that's going on in Italy right now, you know, it's Napoli, even though the city loves Koulibaly, there is that loud minority that are very ignorant. And to put it bluntly, a man of his color in a city like that, it's a very ignorant city. I really hope that the fans don't give him any problem or slack for what he did.
I didn't see any, but I know we were talking before the show, Richard, about the city. Obviously, more racism.
Yeah.
Problems now, and
unfortunately,
again from Caledi, almost 5 months after the incident with Moise Kean, and this time with Romelu Lukaku playing a second game in Italy, takes a penalty for Inter in Caledi. You know, he gets a classic racism against him at that stadium. And once again, the city, I was pretty silent on it after the game, and we were talking about it. The city has been pushing their anti-piracy campaign hard.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to racism,
nothing.
They keep their mouth shut.
Crickets.
Yeah.
Jeez. It's frustrating. Especially, you know, it's not just a Cagliari problem. It's throughout Serie A, and it's you know, all throughout Europe, really. But if we're just focused on Serie A, Cagliari has been multiple repeat offenders. You know, as we were talking about before, obviously, Lukaku incident, Moise Kean before that, Blaise Matuidi, and also with Sonny Montari before a couple years before that. So it's a continuing issue up there. And what we've been talking about Serie A sit-down is that, heck, give Cagliari a 6-game ban, home ban. Make everyone pay for it because it's not the player's fault. They shouldn't be deducted points because they didn't do anything wrong.
No, yeah. Exactly.
Now, the owner maybe could take ownership because they didn't do anything, haven't done anything yet. We'll see what they do now, if anything.
Yeah.
But don't punish the players. Punish the fans. You know, make the whole fan base pay for it, saying you got to take care. You got to watch what your fans are doing and police them because obviously no one else is doing it.
Exactly.
And FIGC's been
terrible.
Obviously quiet.
Yeah.
But I saw something on Twitter. You know, if you punish the team points, that's where it hurts the fans the most. Because obviously the fans want to see their team succeed. But then if they realize it's them that's making them lose points, this might stop.
Yeah. Can I play devil's advocate? I think the ultras don't necessarily have the team at their best interest.
True.
So if
true.
They deduct points, it gives them power. And then maybe they have something against Caledi or something. So they want to deduct them more points to teach them less. Maybe they don't like the owner and want them out, so they want them to get deducted.
After going to like many ultra games for the Montreal Impact, for them it's more of a – of a festival. It's more of more of a party. It's for them, they don't care whether the Impact, well, mind you, they are diehard fans, but at the end of the day, the reason why they're going to the ultra section is to be a bunch of hooligans and have that freedom to be crazy. So I agree with your point on the don't take away the points because it punishes the team. Suspend the fans, because then afterwards, what are they going to do? Just whittle with their thumbs at home.
Here's another thing to think about. who's to say the ultras don't dress up in as the opposing team and then get the racism deducted point to the other team, you know? Say it's a Cali fan dressed up as Inter, and then they start making all those noises, whatever. Everyone will think it'll be Inter fans, and then Inter gets in trouble when really it's the Cali fans dressed up.
That's something to think about.
At that point, the responsibility lies on the stewards to, you know, there's guys staring at the fans all game.
Watching it happen.
Yeah. Though it's their jobs to point out the fans who are making this. We saw videos online of especially one specific fan making racist remarks, and you see a steward watching him, arms crossed, you know,
nothing.
Head happened. In the moon, you know, he's probably thinking about the espresso he's going to have afterwards.
But playing devil's advocate here.
Again.
Playing devil's advocate. Sometimes I like to play devil's advocate. I agree with your point. There, somebody needs to get involved, whether it's somebody who's working at the stadium. You know, heck, even the players themselves of the home team, they should, when they hear stuff like that,
Cepetelli watched again with Keane. Yeah. He did try to calm down the fans.
Like, so they do that. But playing devil's advocate here. These ultras sometimes, they're not all there.
No.
Who's to say one might have something concealed, something sharp, something dangerous, you know? And there have been incidents in the past where there have been stabbings at stadiums and whatnot. So you can't blame a guy who was getting paid minimum wage to not get involved because, Godfrey, what would he rather risk? Like he doesn't want to risk anything like getting paid minimum wage to just get stabbed by a hooligan. Because the people doing these chants, we have to admit, if you're racist in this age, this time and place, you're an idiot. Straight up, there's no like, oh, maybe he's this. No, you're stupid, you're ignorant, and there's no way I'm defending somebody like that. And so they're not all there, and you don't want to risk anything. So I don't really blame the steward working there, but definitely ownership either needs to do something or the league needs to do something.
The higher ups have to.
And it's not just exactly. And these incidents have been happening very often in Cagliari, but. I mean, last year there was a situation with Inter with Koulibaly. Lazio does have a small percentage.
Lazio, it's always them. It's always the same thing.
And sometimes with the Roma-Napoli derby, like the Roma fans are insulting the Napolitans, even though they're only like an hour away from each other, an hour and a half away. The cities themselves, they're very. I don't know why there's so much hatred between. Like, I get why there's the hatred, but hatred cannot be tolerated in the cities at all.
I agree. Just another thing to point out, I saw on Twitter, Cagliari fans show Romelu Lukaku full support, but defend fans from outrageous accusations and silly stereotypes.
Yeah,
I don't know if you saw that as well, but to me, it makes absolutely no sense.
Their statement was garbage.
It was.
They came out and said, this group does not represent our whole fan base. So they're defending somebody. They're obviously defending the innocent. Okay, fine. But in a statement like that, that's not the time and place.
Double standard.
And they actually misspelled his name at first, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
How can you defend him, but then at the same time you're with your supporters? It makes absolutely no sense.
You need the hammer down.
Exactly.
You know, we talked about this quite a bit 5 months ago.
Yeah.
After Ken, it's almost. I'm getting sick and tired of talking about this all the time.
I hate giving it airtime, but
unfortunately,
it's so prominent in our sport.
At least none of Lukaku's teammates came out and said he provoked them.
Yeah. Oh, Bonucci.
Yeah.
Trignar actually turned around and told the fans to shush, too.
To shush, yeah.
Anyways, so we're going to take a short break. On the other side of the break, yellow card, red card, MVP of the week here on the Calcio Guys on CGO 6090.
You know what I think?
9 out of 10 doctors recommend a steady diet of heavy metal riffs. And that last guy is a poser. So tune in to Sin After Sin, 10 p.m. every Wednesday for your weekly dose of old school earth-shattering metal. Only on CJLO. Consuming riffs may cause whiplash and or liver failure. Please headbang responsibly.
That's CJLO. We respect the music our DJs choose to play.
Are they playing f***ing Coldplay?
How long will they wait?
CJLO!
Oh, okay. Hey, how long will they wait? Oh,
hey. Welcome back to the Calcio Guys on CJLO 6090 with Adriano DiNardo, Gianni Della Colli. I'm Nicholas Di Giovanni. We have a special guest, Richard Carmen, this week. So before we get to our MVP and yellow card, red card, obviously with Richard, we obviously saw another high-scoring affair in Serie A Match Day 2, this time Sassuolo-Sampdoria. Sampdoria.
You mean Berardi versus okay. Sampdoria.
How about Sampdoria's defense versus Sampdoria? Because that's how
exactly
bad they become. And seven goals in two games now for Sampdoria. And is it DeFrancesco out already? Do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, that's another one. A new coach, similar to Milan. Gianpaolo's in Milan. DeFrancesco's out there in Sampdoria. I think it's still, you know, an adjustment period. We had our thoughts last year when he was with Roma. I don't think he should have been out, but he got the door. Now he's in a new city, new culture, new society at Samp. And I'm totally shocked. I think this, for me, it'll spill over to the red card, yellow card of the week for me. But Samp, I don't know, has looked terrible defensively. A team that last year, I think, was a lot better. Yeah, they're relying way too much on Aldero, who has to make all kinds of saves, and he can only do so much because their defense can't mark anybody, can't do anything defensively, and they're just totally exposed. So for me, I don't think it's DeFrancesco out. I know in Italy we like to point that finger right away. I'll get him out. You know, we need a new manager, whatever. I think DeFrancesco is a decent coach. I think he can. I don't know. He has to change things around quickly, but I think he could do it slowly. But I don't think it's DeFrancesco out right away.
Yeah, it's interesting. I agree with you. I think DeFrancesco is way too early to do that with him. It almost makes you feel good as a Milan fan. Does Gianpaolo have that much of an effect on the team that when he leaves, the team just becomes nothing?
Yeah, let's hope so.
Yeah, right? But, you know, it is way too early. It's like you said, it's an adjustment period. Let him get a few more games. But, you know, the one thing he has going against him is he has a crazy manager in Ferrero. You don't know this guy. This guy looks like he's drunk and playing high all the time. So who knows what's going to go on in his head, right? So if Sampdoria keep getting, you know, pummeled, you know, for the next, you know, I don't know, five games, he might be out sooner than later. I think it's between him and Montella being the first ones out, depending on how their season goes. But
yeah, maybe
it is too early. I agree. Ultimately, I agree with you, but he has that little caveat that, you know, you have a crazy manager, a crazy owner, I should say. So. You never know what they're thinking. So hopefully Samp doesn't continue to get blown out, you know, going forward.
True.
So one game that did that finished low scoring, that should have had more goals, Derby della Capitale. This is also a game we should have talked about earlier in the show, but it got lost in my notes a bit.
It's okay.
And obviously Lazio Roma, obviously the game that everybody wanted to, you know, everybody in Rome was waiting for all week. Finished 1-1.
Yep.
I don't think Lazio deserved that.
No.
Roma must be happy.
Yeah.
Considering Lazio hit four or five posts.
Roma got away with murder. Zaniolo, though, had an amazing effort in that game.
Two posts.
He's definitely showing that he is, like, as I mentioned many times before, the project going forward for Roma. Lazio deserved the game, though. They deserved the W. They made Roma look like a disorganized mess in the back. I think I have to give MVP of the week to the posts.
Yeah. I was going to say.
Every game had posts, multiple posts.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, like, I know Roma hit a couple, but Lazio, Immobile, I don't know what was going on. Bad luck, the guy. You made a great play, though, for Luis Alberto, I think.
Yeah,
it was scored. But Lazio deserved a better fate in that game. They were the better team.
I know you were traveling, Richard, to Montreal, but did you get a chance to watch the game?
Yeah, I did. And I couldn't believe all the amount of posts, especially Zaniolo. He's become a special player. A couple of those times, I thought for sure, oh, that's going to be a goal. The one long-range one he had, where it had a nice curve on it and hits the post. I'm like, oh, I thought that was going in.
For sure.
It was a crazy game, and I agree with you guys. I think Roma are happy to have the draw on that one for sure. It wasn't as high-scoring as it was last year or whatever. So.
Yeah, and I think Robin Olsen was probably watching the game from Calgary, thinking, why couldn't those posts have come in and save me last year?
Yeah, last derby they had, I think Lazio won 3-0,
yeah,
I think
exactly.
It was, or 3-1.
That was in March.
Yeah.
So after two match days, heading into this first international break, there's three teams with two wins, Inter, Juve, Torino. I mean, Torino has to be the surprise out of them, especially considering they beat Sassuolo at home and Atalanta. Four more teams are undefeated. Lazio, Genoa, Bologna, Verona each have one win, one draw. Roma is the only team that has two draws. And then Fiorentina, Spal, Cagliari, Lecce, and Sampdoria each have two losses. Out of those teams I named, I mean, are any of them a surprise that they have either, you know, this good record or this bad record? Yes, Jenny.
Well, I
raised your hand, so
yeah,
I got to go to you.
No, because one thing I do want to mention, I don't think Torino kind of deserves to be undefeated so far this week. The game versus Atalanta dominated. Torino just scored on the key set pieces that when they needed to, whereas Atalanta, Just weren't able to capitalize on great opportunities. But if you watched the game, Atalanta dominated completely. It's just, like I said, Torino were more opportunistic, I think the word is, where they were just able to capitalize when he needed to. So I don't see Torino lasting that much longer on their little streak. Remember, like, Spal last year, they were, like, for, like, the first first few games, they were in the top six, top eight, and then they kind of eventually settled into their proper role, and I think Torino's probably going to happen to the same. But Inter-Juve, I kind of do can see continuing their domination in Serie A.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. And Torino, it's an interesting animal there because I think they were very fortunate to get that win. But, you know, for me, a team that I'm curious about is Roma with the two draws. They've given up, what, 4 goals in 2 games, 3 goals in their first game, 3-3.
Yeah.
Fonseca has come out and said, you know, I don't really care about defense, but, you know, in so many words. And it showed that first game. But they need a they were a lot better defensively in the Derby della Capitale, but he needs to figure out a nice balance between getting that offensive, you know, because now they have so many good attacking options at Roma. Yeah. And they got to figure that out plus the defense, because defense is the question mark.
I would have to respectfully disagree on the one point about the defensively thing versus Lazio, because the Luis Alberto goal, nobody was covering him. Everybody was so committed to Immobile, because Immobile is a shooter. Yeah. So you had the one defender on him, and then you got Florenzi running back towards the net to cover any potential shot angle that he might have. So Immobile, being smart, passed it back to Luis Alberto, but nobody was on him. There was no center defensive mid on him. Nobody.
And I think the post also helped that matter. Yeah. Like 7-3. Yeah.
I told you, MVP. Makes sense.
But, and Adriano, so both the teams without a win, Fiorentina, Spal, Cagliari, Lecce, Sampdoria. Which of those teams are you worried about? Personally, I think Sampdoria has to be worried, considering the summer that they had with the new owner, and they let in 6 goals. They haven't had a single point in 2 games. Yeah, yeah. I know it's only 2 games, but...
Yeah. I would agree with you, absolutely. I mean, for me, it's seeing how they started off last year, and seeing Fabio Quagliarella doing what he did last year, and now it's like it's a long lost dream now, it seems like, because they can't get anything going. But for me, I don't know, I'm a little bit sad. And again, it's only 2 games, we've mentioned it many times right now, that it's only 2 games, but I don't know, the Fiorentina project, I had so much hype behind it, and it hasn't started off the greatest. Yes, they've been unlucky. They faced Napoli in their first game, and it was a high scoring shootout. Last game this weekend against Genoa was another unfortunate break for them as well. Again, I think it's, you know, slowly things will turn in Florence. I'm a big fan of the Commisso project. I think things can change, but as Richard said, Montella might be the question mark there. Is he going to stick around? Will he be out the door? Will he have enough to bring this project into a reality? I think it's a big question mark. So yeah, for me, I'm a little bit saddened by the start of the season for Fiorentina.
I'd like to ask the Napoli fan a question. Are you worried at all that they gave up 7 goals over 2 games? And they, obviously they have the great, probably the best defender in the world on their team, and now they got Manolas. But that's a lot of goals in 2 games.
Wait. We have to have you back. This is a great conversation. We have to have you back.
Yes, definitely. Thank you for admitting that there's somebody better than everybody's hyping on Virgil van Dijk. Mind you, Virgil van Dijk is great and all, but...
He's not elite.
Yeah.
But anyways,
not the next Maldini either.
No, but in my personal opinion, I feel like as if it's too soon to say. Manolas playing in Roma, I knew he was never like the greatest defender. He was fast and he was decent, but he's not amazing, you know. But it was good because now he's not the number one guy like he was in Roma. Now he's like number two, so he has less pressure on him and he's able to play offensively. So offensively, they're great, but I'm liking it. I think it's gonna settle down a bit. Koulibaly didn't play preseason, so he's a bit rusty, but eventually things will settle.
So 7 minutes before we have to cut the break, MVP, yellow card, red card, which one do you want to do first? We're gonna have our guests choose.
Let's do yellow card, red card.
Okay, so as I explained to you on break, we're gonna get one card each, anything you want. Who do you give your card to this week?
Me? I'm going to go with the Cagliari fan base, the Ultras. They got a red card for me. It was despicable what they did, what they've done continuously. And it's really a shame, not only for the league, but for the country, for everything. It's just something needs to be done about them, about what they do. Not just them, all the Ultras, but in particular Cagliari in this instance. They've just been a travesty for this league and the team.
So that's a red card to Cagliari.
This is going to be red card. And is that going to change the course of the game?
Adriano?
I think we can all agree, honestly, what Richard said. But for me, as I said, it's going to spill over to the red card, yellow card for me. Samp's defense, Samp just in general, totally surprised me, totally shocked me. I thought they would start off a bit better. They added some guys defensively. I think Murillo is there now. I thought he would be an addition that can help them, but clearly not. I mean, it's still depending on Quagliarello up top and Odero in the back. Everything else in between hasn't really been cohesive. They lost Pret in the summer as well, which is another piece. But defensively, I don't know. It's just been in shambles for Samp as of late. Again, new coach. I don't know if that has to do anything with it. But for me, definitely red card. Start of the season for Samp is not how they wanted.
Damn, a red card for their bad defense.
Yeah.
And the red card is out.
Johnny?
I'm probably going to have to give my yellow card to DeFrancesco. I'm not going to be on your guys' side. I'm going to be on my side. Having him in Roma and what he did for the team, not that great. And now it's leaching into Sampdoria. I feel like as if him himself, he's not a bad guy, but I don't think he's top league material yet. Maybe he might need to go back to the lower leagues and kind of, you know, like, I guess, sharpen up a bit, because I feel like as if he's not capable of handling the pressure of an upper league team. So what he's doing with Sampdoria is very abysmal and it's very unfortunate, so I'm going to have to give him the yellow.
This is definitely going to be another yellow.
So for me, I'm going to give a yellow to Matias De Ligt for his performance against Napoli. Obviously, it's not the start he wanted. And, you know, he is 20 years old. He's still young. I wasn't happy about his performance in the game, but I'm not worried about the future. You know, he misses marking. Obviously, on the Lozano goal, he just wasn't there. He wasn't marking at all. And there was a lot of criticism on Twitter against him. Again, fans were freaking out. You know, we spent $80 million on this kid, and he can't even defend against Napoli. You know, he left the Netherlands to get away from Lozano, and then he comes back to haunt him.
True, huh? That's a good point.
It's just one game, you know. That's why I'm not going to give a red card. It's just going to be yellow to Matias De Ligt for his bad defense against Napoli.
And he now sees a flash of yellow before his eyes.
So, Richard, your MVP of the week.
I'm going to go with a guy who was almost a forgotten man at Sassuolo and really in the league in the Azzurri. And I'm going to go Domenico Berardi, 3 goals before halftime, really.
Unbelievable.
The last goal was the best one for me from long distance. Beautiful curve on it, but yeah. Great performance by him, and having a guy like Duncan and his other guys on his team, he's going to hopefully have a better season, a comeback season maybe.
Berardi on his left, looking for the hat-trick, drills it in. Domenico Berardi has a hat-trick inside the first half on his first start of the season.
So Berardi gets Richard Carmen's first MVP here on the Calcio Guys. Wow. Adriano?
What an endorsement that is.
I hope he hears it.
Yeah, hopefully many more to come. But for me, I'm going to go back to the Genoa-Fiorentina game. I'm going to have to give my MVP of the week to Christian Kouame. I think he started off the season very well. That's 2 goals in 2 games for him. He's young, he's promising, he's electric. His goal, I mean, yes, they caught Fiorentina's defense sleeping, but he had enough confidence to, you know, to take the defender one-on-one and put it past Dragowski, a good goalkeeper in Serie A. Credit also to Radu, who booted it down the field. I don't know how he pinpoint passed him to Kouame like that, but Kouame was able to control the ball and go up the field. Pinamonti dragging off to the left, and he did it all on his own and got the goal to get the winner, actually, to make it 2-1 for Genoa and the win. So for me, that's, you know, 2 games, 2 goals for Kouame, and for me this week, MVP of the week.
Hey, shout out to Paolo Giglione also.
Yep.
From Genoa. He had a good game.
And Zapata too, on a debut goal.
Yeah.
As well.
There were 3 goals by Zapatas and this weekend.
Yes, there was.
Anyway, so your MVP goes to Kouame.
Yes.
Far too much space. Kouame, Pinamonti really not offering much, drifting out to the left. Kouame this time! He does find the back of the net! And the crucial second goal is Genoa's.
So, Gianni, we got 2 minutes before break.
Yeah.
Your MVP?
My MVP is going to go to Luigi Seppe, former Napoli prospect. 10 saves in the Parma-Udinese game. It's easy to see that if you watch the highlights, the saves that he pulled were phenomenal. Kept Parma in there comfortably for the 3-1 win. Goalies usually don't get that much credit in our show, but I think, especially when your keeper puts up a 5-plus save performance, I think he deserves some love. So I'm going to give my MVP to Luigi Seppe.
You know, and it's funny, because the game finished 3-1 for Parma, you wouldn't have thought Seppe was called on that much.
Yeah.
But yeah, he did have some good saves. He is a good goaltender.
Yeah. You know,
he's not,
especially for Parma now.
Yeah.
On his second season
for Parma. You know, he's not a Champions League goaltender. He's not a Europa League goaltender. But for middle of the table team like Parma, he is really solid.
Yeah.
So your MVP goes to Luigi Sepe. Mine goes to Douglas Costa for his performance against Napoli. I really do think this year is his breakout year. 2 years ago, in his first year with Juventus, he looked really good. He had a lot of confidence. I remember towards the end of the season, he was just on fire. And then last year, after his suspension for spitting on Di Francesco,
he just
dropped. He stopped playing. You know, Allegri didn't choose him as much. He had no confidence. And I think Sarri really wants him in his plans this year. And we know how Sarri is, always choosing the same players.
Yeah.
So I think Douglas Costa is going to be playing a lot. And I like what I'm seeing so far from him. He's really creative. He's finding the open spaces, finding the open man. And it's the winger Juventus has been missing. You know, he could play on the left side now, and then Ronaldo could play.
He could play over, on both sides.
Costa could play, but if you need, Ronaldo could play inside, and then Costa on the right side.
Exactly.
Dybala possibly Costa on the left side, Dybala. We saw it towards the end of the game on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, you're listening to the Calcio Guys here on CGO 6090. On the other side of a break, we're going to tee up the national team. First time they've been playing in, 3 months, I believe?
Yep.
And for their European qualifiers.
Check out Concordia Store's back-to-school deals. Huge savings on all of your back-to-school essentials, supplies, tech accessories, and Concordia gear. Show your color with the Concordia Crew at $24.99 or a $29.99 hoodie. Plus, save 25% on all backpacks. Concordia Stores, find everything you need for school in stores or online at concordiastores.ca.
Hey CJLO listeners, are you looking for a show that's going to take you on a ride? We'll park it right here every Tuesday night at 9 p.m., where Camille and Crystal Christine will be discussing local and international trending topics, along with special segments like health, dating, and more. Plus, you never know who may drop in and join our conversation.
CGLO 1690 AM. Sounds best? Crank to 11.
One American and three Canadians were playing the Italian national anthem. That's when you know the Italian national team is back for the European qualifiers. And Richard, you were saying before, you do have a bit of Italian ancestry in your blood. So, of course, you do watch the national team.
Absolutely. 100%. I've always watched them since I was young. Roberto Baggio, I mean, watching him in his ponytail growing up. In the World Cup, before you guys talk.
Yeah.
I saw it towards the end of Baggio's career.
Yeah.
Johnny's a bit older.
I've always been a staple in my house. And so I always get excited to see them play. 100%.
What we did on our first show almost a year ago, we talked about our favorite moments with the national team, and pretty much for three of us, was July 9, 2006. But I got to ask, you did see the '90s Italy.
Yeah.
What is your favorite moment?
Favorite moment. I mean, that's got to be up there. I mean, I wish Paolo Maldini was on the team or got to play more. But yeah, it's right up there. I mean, it's been a lot of lowlights. I can think of a lot of lowlights I don't want to talk about. But, you know, getting to see Roberto Baggio play in the mid-90s, seeing that team that in Euro 2000, which they nearly, you know, they went really far.
Mm-hmm. That was a good squad.
Totti was magnificent in that tournament.
That was a great squad.
Whatever. Those are highlights for me, but I think the World Cup has to be taken top of the cake for sure.
So with the qualifiers coming up against Armenia on Thursday, Finland on Sunday, or did I mix them up?
No, Finland Sunday, yeah, Armenia Thursday.
So Armenia Thursday, Finland Sunday, both road games. Italy obviously undefeated in their group. Obviously, Roberto Mancini did come out with his call-up list. I think we did this last year. We went group by group, so goalies, defenders, midfielders, and attackers, and we gave them a letter grade. Yeah. Or you want to go letter grade or grade out of 10?
Grade out of 10. Yeah. We'll change it up.
Okay, we'll go grade out of 10. We'll just give them a quick note. We'll go round table. So, goalkeepers, Donnarumma, Golini, Meret, Sidigu, Richard.
We got four goalies.
Yeah, I knew Adriano was going to be upset.
I don't know why we got four goalies.
I'm going to give it an eight.
An eight?
I'm going to go eight as well, actually.
You want to talk about in terms of quality or number?
Yeah.
Well, quality-wise, it is an eight. But decision-wise, I don't know why he hasn't settled down on three goalies yet for the choice. I don't know why he's still...
Thank you.
Like, I don't know why he still got the four in his mind. But anyways...
I mean, it's just for training, right?
I guess so. But quality-wise, I think I would go with an eight as well.
I'll change it up and go in a 7.5.
Perfect.
7.8 on 10. Too much goalkeeping.
Seriously.
Donnarumma, Sidigu, I think they're going to battle it out for the number one spot.
Yeah.
I feel like they might even split games. Obviously, Golini, Meret, they're there to learn. Defenders, Acerbi, Bonucci, Decilio, Emerson, Florenzi, Izzo, Mancini, Luca Pellegrini, and Romagnoli. I'll take this one. Because Chiellini's hurt, and I'm not a fan of their choice of fullbacks with Emerson, I would have rather seen Lazzari come in, even Caligiuri from Schalke.
That's right.
Di Lorenzo too, maybe.
Yeah, exactly, Giovanni Di Lorenzo. I'm not the biggest fan of this fullback group. Defensively, between Acerbi, Bonucci, Mancini, Romagnoli, you know, it's good. Even Izzo, can't forget Izzo.
Mm.
I'm going to go with a 6.5.
6.5.
John, I'm going to go just because... DeCilio's name is on the list. He got dropped. I'm going to go 6.
6?
Yeah, because I'm not obviously a fan of DeCilio for many reasons. Chiellini's out. There's no Lazzari and a couple other guys I would put in over some of the guys in there. So I'm going to give a 6.
6? You said 6.5, Nick?
Yeah.
I'll go 7. I think you guys nailed it on the head. The loss of Chiellini it doesn't really worry me as much because I think it gives a chance for the other guys to get in there, which they need to get in there to get these experiences because Chiellini's not getting any younger.
It's all about an experimentation, right?
Experimentation
is an actual word.
Yeah, we found out the hard way, but we found out. But no, I think it isn't as much of a worry. But I'll give this group a 7 because I think there is some quality still. A
very underlining point is that Chiellini's not getting any younger. That's eventually, right. We'll play games.
Exactly.
That won't. Like, eventually in the future, we're not going to have Chiellini around, so you need to play these kids.
Yeah.
I like the young group that he has. I give it a 7.5 on 10 because we need to actually see them play in some form of pressure. And internationals, I guess, is probably one of the times where you feel the most pressure. So let's see what these kids can do.
So quickly, because I actually want to talk about the games themselves, midfielders, Barella, Cristante, Jorginho, Lorenzo Pellegrini, Sensi, and Verratti. I'm going to go 10 out of 10.
Cristante, Tonali. Cristante out, Tonali in.
Sorry. Thanks for correcting that. I'm going to go 10 out of 10. I think between Barella, Jorginho, Sensi, and Verratti, these are the best four midfielders Italy has right now, and they're playing at the top of their game. Sensi looks fantastic for Inter.
Rebirth,
Just an amazing player. Maybe we didn't notice him as much for Sassuolo, or maybe it's because he's playing it with Conte. He's had a fantastic two games. So quickly now, Gianni.
10 out of 10. It's hard to argue.
I'll go 9.5.
10 out of 10 with Tonali.
There you go. We all love this midfield, finally. And then forward, Belotti, Bernardeschi, Chiesa, El Shaarawy coming from China, Immobile, Insigne, Lasagna. Not the biggest fan of the last name there, Kevin Lasagna.
A lot of wingers, I find.
Yeah, and maybe he'll score on Sunday because Lasagna is always good on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
And... I'll go 8.5.
8.5.
I would have loved to see Qualiarella instead.
I'm not a fan that there's so many wingers and there's going to be a lot of people competing for those spots, but still, they're all strong players. They're all like guys who are capable of scoring and guys that are capable of playing around with the ball. So I'm going to give it an 8. That's what we need. We need some creativity up front.
I agree. I mean, I would have liked to see Balotelli. I don't know if he got a look or not, but I think I want to see him back in the Italian national team.
Well, he's also not playing right now, so it's understandable.
It is understandable. I think he will get in there, but I think it's in due course. But for me, I don't know. I'll give 8.5. I agree with you guys. We just need a score. If we can get a guy who can start scoring in the Italian national team, we have the creativity. We have the guys that can get the service. We just need the finish. So for me, 8.5 as well.
I'm going to give it an 8 because I kind of want to see Qualiarella and also Moise Kean over like El Shaarawy and stuff like that. So I'm going to give him an 8 out of 10 because overall I like the team, but I think there's missing a couple pieces, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So 5 minutes before we have to hand the show over to Five Songs With, what do you hope to see from these two games?
Building on the defense and the attack. I think the midfield, we got top-notch midfield. I think it's all about the attack and get some goals and defense. Again, a solid 4 to go.
I agree. I mean, I said it before. I think it's out of all the departments, I think attacking is our weakest point. Unfortunately, we have the talent. We just don't have the finish, as I said. We've been saying this for so long now with the Italian national team. So for me, I think the transition from the midfield, from the defense to the midfield to the forwards, I think it a bit more smoothly would be nice. And some goals passed, I think would be like the cherry on top. So for me, it's definitely still an attacking issue. And I just hope guys like Immobile, guys like Belotti can translate what they're doing in Serie A into the Italian national team and produce for La Nazionale.
I think a sense of brotherhood should be developed from these games. It's a very, let's just put it bluntly, a very light schedule in terms of the teams that you're playing against. So you don't have, the games are not as serious. You're on top of your group, right? So there's not much stress to perform well. You still want to perform well, but there's like not a much of emphasis on it. And the players need to build some kind of chemistry since they all play on different teams. There's no core there are some, but like it's very minimal cores. So it's important to develop that kind of chemistry and brotherhood between the players. When they won in 06, what connected them was the brotherhood of like, oh my God, we had Cacciopoli that just ruined our entire names. Let's show that it wasn't the players. It was actually the owners that ruined the Italian soccer name. And that's what united them. And I'm not saying you need something drastic like that again to happen. But if teams that want to go far, they need to show that they're united as one. You know, they need to have that connected mentality. And like it doesn't have to be just within the players themselves. Croatia, they went far this year with the basis that, oh, everybody thinks we're a small nation, but we know we're good at soccer and let's show the world. And even though they unfortunately lost versus France, they were like a very huge underdog story and now everybody fell in love with them, you know? So I just think like hopefully maybe it doesn't have to be anything major like that, but some kind of brotherhood, some kind of connection between the players should be made during this trip.
Agreed.
I think you said that perfectly because, you know, just looking at the midfield core, only Sensi and Barella play together, forwards all from different teams, the defenders, quickly looking at it again, all from different teams. And it's rare you see that across any of the national teams. You know, Spain, it's between Real Madrid and Barcelona. Maybe France, it's a bit more spread out even across leagues. England too, but for the Italian national team, that's rare that we've had this diverse group. And you know, Richard, you've seen this team as longer than any of the three of us, and you said,
unfortunately, no. What are you trying to say?
Exactly. No, but you said you've seen a lot of low points, and obviously 2 years ago was a low point, and it's a long time that we've at least been positive with this group.
Yeah. So what's the positive of this group? This group is young, and they can be developed into bees. I mean, Chiesa is going to be something special. I think he can lead the national team to glory. So I think a lot of youth there, a lot of optimism there. So
thank you. A man of culture understands how Chiesa is important to this team. They disagree with the fact that I say Chiesa is probably the best Italian player right now.
I don't disagree, but he still has some stuff.
So Insigne doesn't exist?
Honestly, as much as I love Insigne, I put Chiesa over Insigne.
Okay.
Insigne has delivered in very important games.
Change into a FIFA, football manager. What are we doing here? But I think it's exciting times. As Richard said, the youth is there, and I think it's only positive signs to come.
And unfortunately, that will have to do it for us today.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Richard Carmen from City sit down to really join us on the show, all the way coming all the way from Washington,
just to see us, just to see us in the studio, just to see us.
Like as if Montreal's a nice city to visit. No, just come up for a little radio show. Thank you for your time, honestly.
And I hope you enjoy the city.
I love the city so far. I love being on the show today. So
we'll do this again sometime soon.
Yeah. Anyways, thanks for listening.
Ciao.
Bye, guys.
Think of something cool to say. I'll just say all right. It's nice cop out cliche. Maybe you guys didn't notice that. Maybe that's just me. Anyways, we just had two Canadian indie artists play. We had Caribou with their track Odessa. You may have recognized that was in an Acura commercial, which makes it a lot less cool. But, oh well, what you gonna do? I just have that hipster mentality where I can't really listen to things. They get too popular. Or if so, I need to wait.